And I've got my next guest is Janet Phelan, is an investigative journalist, the American's Bulletin, and talk show host of KQ Ashland, Oregon. Since 9/11, she's focused her work on eugenics programs with the United States of America. She is best known for her article, Water is a Weapon, and her investigations on the war against the elderly and vulnerable through the conservatorship and guardianship programs in state superior courts. And she's also author of the Hitler poems. These poems depict a journey through a dark landscape where the political and personal are fused into a geography of disinformation, sex, betrayal, and deadly technology. Phelan has produced verbal snapshots of a subterranean war with fronts in Los Angeles as well as Fallujah, where the only defense is one's integrity and stakes may be life itself. Go ahead and Janet, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
We seem to have a little bit of an audibility problem
okay.
Where I am.
Let's see
but
if
we'll
I can
go ahead and see how we do.
Okay. Is that any better? Does that make any difference? No.
Not here.
Okay. Well, this is a new board. We changed out. We got all nice new equipment, but so a little bit of novice here working the board tonight since I'm here by myself. So I'm hoping that people can bear with me on this while I while we work through this, and while we're talking, we'll go ahead and see if we can get this adjusted. So Janet, would you like to go ahead and fill? I mean, Janet's come back. She was on about a month or so ago, and she'd gotten into the conservatorship and guardianship issue. And did you want to follow that up a little bit, Janet?
Yes, I do, and I greatly appreciate your having me back on. The issue is unfolding in very, very serious ways. We now have Assemblyman Dave Jones in California, who authored in large part the Omnibus Conservatorship Reform Act of, I believe it was 2006, which was supposed to address the problem. The Los Angeles Times had published in November of 2005 a quote-unquote expose on the conservatorship problem, which was pretty watered-down kind of an expose, but it certainly got people alarmed. And at that point, the California legislature swung into action, and Dave Jones and Senator Scott and some others, you know, state legislators, wrote the Omnibus Conservatorship Reform Act of 2006, which was passed. Governor Schwarzenegger subsequently after signing the bill, he line-item vetoed all the funding. But it looks like this is possible that this year that the proposed solutions will get some funding. However, the problem goes so much deeper than simply getting new laws. There are laws already in place, and the probate judges are simply ignoring the laws, and we are getting no oversight whatsoever from the Judicial Council. And I'm going to give a rather shocking example here. In probate court on April 30th, a little over a month ago, a commissioner, who was commissioners considered judges in California, commissioner actually overturned a decision made by a judge in Los Angeles Superior Court. This commissioner was sitting in Riverside Superior Court in a probate court. There had been a decision made 2 years prior in Santa Monica Court that simply impacted a probate attorney. It was not a conservatorship matter. It simply impacted, negatively, financially impacted a probate attorney who regularly appears in Riverside Superior Court. His name is J. David Horsepool. And on April 30th, Commissioner Joan Burgess chose to overturn a decision made by a sitting Superior Court judge in a parallel court in a different county without ever hearing any evidence or calling the matter into her own court. The matter was that a restraining order was someone was attempting to get protective orders to protect themselves from Attorney Horsepool, and the judge did not award Attorney Horsepool his court costs. And apparently Commissioner Burgess didn't like it that her homeboy didn't get his court costs, so she just overturned the decision and awarded them without ever hearing the restraining order, without ever hearing any evidence, just simply didn't like it that her homeboy didn't get his money. Now, you know, this may sound like a minor matter, but I assure you it is not, because what this indicates here is that if you don't like the decision in your county, you get a court that doesn't tailor to your wishes, you just go over to another county and get a different decision. This is called judge shopping, and it is completely illegal. Commissioner Burgess was advised in writing with points and authorities that she cannot overturn another court's decision. She did it anyway.
So is this kind of like significant for, is this happening in other places?
Well, you know, this is the problem now. I got a call just a couple of days ago from a lady out in Scottsdale, Arizona, who is now dealing with real problems in probate court. Probate court is where the conservatorship and guardianship issues are heard. And she was stating also that she has a judge overturning a decision in a parallel court. It cannot be done legally. It is a violation of the state constitution. The judges don't care about the law. This is becoming more and more evident. I'm now calling these probate courts the canary in the coal mine, because we're seeing lengths to which these judges and commissioners will go simply in order to favor those who they have a prior relationship with. And these probate attorneys, they're going into these courts regularly. They have, you know, established relationships with the judges. And the judges will simply violate the Constitution of the state of California. And apparently in the case of this lady in Scottsdale, it appears possibly the Constitution of the state of Arizona, simply to make sure that their pre-existing relationship with that probate attorney gets honored and they get the funds that they want. Now, you know, what this means for our system of justice is that we don't have one. We don't have any protection. If we get a judgment in one court, then if the party has contacts in another court, they'll just overturn it. So it throws our justice system, which is already very badly shredded, into complete chaos.
But where the significance comes in then is when, for the elderly, do you want to get into that a little bit?
Well, these conservatorship programs appear to be really the civil rights issue of our time, or at least one of them. I mean, we have so many now, don't we, with NSA spying, with rendition, with torture, with the Military Commissions Act. But what we are seeing here is where a class of people, a group of people who could be classified as elderly or disabled, because conservatorships also are initiated against people who are alleged to be disabled. What we're seeing is that a group of people are being regularly and routinely denied their civil rights in these conservatorship proceedings. We have a case out in Florida where an elderly person was put under a conservatorship by her grandson because her daughter, which was the grandson's mother, had been stealing from the elderly woman, and the family found out about it. In order to quash the police investigation, they stuck her under a conservatorship. The woman didn't last very long. We'll just say that she was given a diagnosis. I'm sorry, not a diagnosis. She went. The conservator took her in apparently for medical treatment, examination. She got there were some concerns about, you know, something wrong with the lower region. She got a diagnosis of colitis. The guardian, without any medical documentation, transformed it into a diagnosis of colon cancer. stuck her into hospice. She lasted 10 days. She was plied with morphine until she died. She had no diagnosis of cancer. And all this had was done, apparently, to relieve the bad daughter of accusations of theft. So, in terms of civil rights, the elderly are, and this is happening just at the time that the baby boomers are getting ready to retire. The elderly are being funneled into these programs. Once you're in a temporary guardianship, you can't even hire a lawyer to get yourself out because all of your funds are suddenly transferred to the temporary guardian or conservator. Those words are really interchangeable.
So how does one protect themselves of this?
Well, see, this is a real problem because what we're seeing is that that the documents which should, like a durable power of attorney, a living trust, all that stuff, they're being thrown out by the courts. These judges, like Commissioner Burgess, who sits on the bench in Riverside, California, these judges are only interested, so many of them, only interested in perpetuating the process and in making sure that their homeboys, their own probate attorneys, get the money. So we are supposed to have an independent and impartial judiciary, and we are seeing more and more in these probate conservatorship cases that the judges are highly biased in favor of the conservators and their attorneys. And once you get into a temporary conservatorship, you're going to have a heck of a time getting out. It almost never happens. It happens from time to time, but almost never. So the bad news is the documents which should protect you don't.
So in other words, you're saying that we kind of need to hold the judges accountable? Is that about the only thing that you're saying? Because, I mean, if the documents should hold up otherwise, but...
Well, the decision of Judge Lefkowitz in Santa Monica Superior Court was a binding decision. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Burgess overturned it, you know, without blinking an eye. Mm-hmm. That is part of the state constitution.
Wow.
These judges and commissioners, and they simply, they're like kings in their court, really. And who is going to hold them accountable? Do you report it? You cannot sue a judge. You have a judicial immunity. So what do? You appear before the judge who is already biased, who is already favoring the conservators, the probate attorneys. You plead your case, and it is pointless. At one point in these proceedings in Riverside, the person was stating the case that the judge had no right, you know, to do this. And the judge, rather the commissioner, Joan Burgess, simply told the party that if she didn't start talking, she'd pull her court call. She was appearing telephonically. So, you know, we have judges who are abusive. We have judges who are functioning outside of the law. And who is stopping them?
Well, you and I both have talked a little bit about Randy Kelton and Deborah Stevens, mm-hmm. who have been trying to hold some of these judges accountable down there in Texas, but they are kind of working with people through their radio program to kind of start holding them accountable for code. I'm trying to think of the word I want, but because what a lot of them are doing is they're having policies that aren't really following the codes, statutory codes is what I want.
They're not following the statutory codes, you're right.
Yes.
Well, what can you do in regard to actually charging some of these officials with violating our Constitution? Are there any parameters that would allow them to come under scrutiny?
Well, I was speaking with an attorney, a probate attorney in Southern California just today about this, and we got into a bit of a disagreement because she was saying that you cannot sue a judge unless they step out of their role as a judge. And we got into some dispute about what that would be. I was saying that when a judge overturns a decision made by another judge in another county, when she's not in appeals court, then she stepped outside of her role as a judge. And that probate attorney was disagreeing with that, saying, well, if the judge starts beating you up, you know, physically beating you up, then she has stepped outside of her role. And she said with some humor. That's the role of the bailiff, you know. So there's some dispute about this, but I do have some ideas, and I want to state I am going to be speaking at the Revolution for Freedom Festival, which is going to be held over the long July 4th holiday. If you go to revolutionforfreedom.com, and it's the number 4, you can see a little bit about the festival.
Yeah, that looks kind of interesting.
I'm going to be bringing some organizing materials with me, and one of the things I think we need to do, and this is grassroots, it does not involve court proceedings or suing judges or taking them to the, you know, the state bar, all of which are becoming, you know, less and less profitable courses. What we need to do is we need to organize court watches, and we need to organize them, you know, in all the counties, so that when these probate judges, these conservatorship judges, walk into court, they will be facing a row of individuals with their court watch buttons who are there to observe and take notes and to report on whether or not the judge bends and breaks the law.
Can they keep them out of court, though?
I don't think that's possible. Some proceedings are closed, but in general, these conservatorship hearings are not closed.
Okay.
And that is one way, you know, this is going to take a lot of effort. It's going to take a lot of organization. But the fact is we are dealing with people who are very well organized. You know, that they almost constitute organized crime. Unfortunately, many of them are sitting in courts overhearing other people's situations involving other people's lives, their money, their freedom. And we need to start organizing as a people to take back our courts and to do it without acts of violence. We need to obey the law, and we need to make sure that our judges obey the law, because they are not.
Now, you're doing a radio program, and you want to talk a little bit about that as well as these? I do want to have you back on, because I definitely want to get into this water as a weapon issue, because there's a lot of information that you've uncovered there that people need to kind of be kind of aware of, but also that, you know, you have some interesting guests, and you probably cover a number of these subjects on your radio program that is streamed on the Internet, correct?
Yes, my radio program is in Ashland, Oregon. It is on KSKQ, that's like King, Sam, King, Queen, and it streams off the web at kskq.org. It is on every Wednesday between 5 and 6 p.m. Pacific time. And the name of the show is One If By Land, from Paul Revere's Ride. You know, One If By Land, Two If By Sea, and I on the opposite shore will be, to quote a little poetry. And what we're attempting to do with the show is to focus on stories that very often the mainstream media is deaf, dumb, and blind to. And by the way, thank you so much, Melody, for having me on the air and the other wonderful guests that you have. Because non-corrupt, non-compromised media is becoming a very rare bird indeed. But we are running now these conservatorship stories on the average about once a month. We're getting either people who have had experience with the impact of conservatorship court hitting their family like a Mack truck, which is exactly what it feels like. We're also having on attorneys and others who have had experience with these courts and can speak with great knowledge about the sorts of shenanigans going on there now.
Well, would that not also tie into the fact that they can kind of go through the whole funds of the person that the conservatorship, if I'm saying that correctly, that they have? In other words, they can drain their money and then leave them high and dry?
Oh, thank you so much for bringing that up. When you're dealing with elderly people, very very often you have you know, entire life savings. And once a person goes under conservatorship, the funds are transferred to the conservator, who is supposedly protecting the elderly person from their own lack of capacity. And what we are seeing is that this is a money-rich business that in some cases, in some states, the conservators are charging $400 an hour for writing checks or paying bills. And the accountability, since we are dealing with judges who are obviously often compromised, what the conservators are doing, they are padding their accounts, they are making up charges, they are draining the money very, very quickly. And unfortunately, what we are also seeing, we're seeing cases where, where $500,000 has gone through in 6 months, and you try to figure out where it goes, and the judges just bat their pretty eyes and call the next case on the docket. It is absolutely, it is a predatory, and basically it is an attack on the savings of the elderly. That's what it is. $500,000 gone through in 6 months, and you try to figure out where the money's gone, and nobody wants to talk about it. Well, the money goes to pay the conservator's bills and the conservator's attorney. And the elderly person is very quickly often funneled into a nursing home, whether or not it's necessary. And if there are protective children, if there are children of the elderly person or other relatives who are trying to derail, this obscene attack on the funds, then very often there are restraining orders issued against them. We have seen this is a typical MO now. If a daughter or a son, realizing that their elderly person is not being well treated and the funds are not being carefully conserved, the elderly person himself may not be well treated by the conservator. If they attempt to go to court and to file objections, they may just end up with a restraining order against them. And as we see with the judges, it's all rubber stamped now.
Well, Janet, I want to, again, thank you for, you're kind of a dying breed as far as journalists go. And then I see that you've kind of taken up the radio. And so it's great that there's somebody out there like you that's, really delving into some of these issues.
Thank you for doing so. It is so necessary.
Yes.
Well, I want to thank you so much for having me on the air. Pacifica is a very, very important, it serves a very important function right now with the sorts of things going on in the country and in the world. And I unfortunately, some of Pacifica seems to have gone the way of deaf, dumb, and blind, but there's still people like you out there who are running these stories and getting the word out, and thank you so much for that.
And thank you. And again, I want to have you back on the program. And I want to thank my co-host tonight, Katie O'Brien, too, for stepping up to the plate and helping me out here.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, and coming up next is the program Joe Frank. And again, Janet, I want to say good night and thank you. And you too, Katie.
Oh, good night. Thanks, ladies.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.